Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Welcome to this podcast, which is brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. Today I will be discussing six interesting presentations that were given at the annual meeting of the American Academy of Neurology, which was held in Boston from 22 to 27th of April. The first study I would like to discuss is a TERRAS study. This is a phase 3 study that investigated teriflunomide in patients with radiologically isolated syndrome, or RIS. RIS represents the earliest detectable preclinical phase of MS. MRI features of RIS subjects are highly similar to MS without clinical symptoms. In a previous study, the use of dimethyl fumarate to prevent the clinical onset of MS was associated with a risk reduction of over 80%. The phase 3 TERRAS study aimed to evaluate the efficacy and safety of the disease-modifying treatment teriflunomide with a different mechanism of action in a cohort of participants with RIS from Europe and Turkey. First author, Dr. Christine Lebrun-Frenet from France, presented the results. She explained that the TERRAS study included 89 participants of 80 years or older who fulfilled the 2009 RIS criteria. Participants were randomized 1-to-1 to teriflunomide 14 mg daily or placebo. The primary outcome measure was a time to onset of a first clinical symptom that can be attributed to a CNS demyelinating event over 96 weeks. Of randomized participants, 63 were women. The mean age was 40 years and the age at index MRI was 38 years. During 96 weeks of follow-up, 28 clinical events were detected, 8 in the teriflunomide and 20 in the placebo group. This difference was significant in both the unadjusted and adjusted analysis. In the adjusted analysis, the hazard ratio was 0.28 with a p-value of 0.007 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.11 to 0.71. Though not statistically significant, the number of MRI lesions was also lower in the treatment group compared to placebo. For the cumulative number of GD-positive lesions, the adjusted rate ratio was 0.33. For new or enlarging T2 lesions, the adjusted RR, or rate ratio, was 0.57. Then there was Professor Sabrina Paganoni of the Massachusetts General Hospital in the USA, who presented results of the HEALEY-ALS platform. The HEALEY-ALS platform trial is a perpetual adaptive phase 2-3 multi-regimen trial that allows for shared trial infrastructure and the use of shared placebo data. Professor Paganoni said that the key to successfully launching this trial is working with multiple stakeholders, industry, FDA, patients, investigators, and foundations. The trial is composed of one protocol, over 70 enrolling sites, around 1,300 participants, and a total of 7 treatment regimens. Key inclusion criteria included sporadic or familial ALS, at least 3 years after the onset of weakness, and a slow vital capacity of no more than 50% of predicted. Each regimen is compared 3-to-1 to a shared placebo dataset, which is continuously expanding. Participants cannot choose the drug they may be assigned. Interim analyses are performed for early futility. There is a 24-week randomized placebo-controlled treatment period, followed by an open-label extension. The primary endpoint of the RCT is a change in disease severity measured by the ALS Functional Rating Scale revised. Professor Paganoni explained that the study also provides a unique opportunity to put new ALS biomarkers and outcome measures to the test, DNA, neurofilaments, and speech analysis. She added that the overall objective of the study is to provide a go or no-go decision for the clinical development of each regimen. A total of 653 ALS patients were randomized within the first 4 regimens, of which she presented the results. Regimen A was zilucoplan, 0.3 mg per kilo daily, a complement inhibitor targeting C5, a terminal complement activation pathway component. After the 4th interim analysis, the trial was terminated for futility. No major safety concerns were identified. Professor Paganoni stressed this decision saved over 250 visits plus 5 months of operational activities. Regimen B was verdiperstat, 600 milligrams twice daily, a myeloperoxidase inhibitor. It was well tolerated but failed to show any differences in primary or secondary endpoints versus placebo. Like regimen A, it received a no-go decision. Regimen C was CNM-AU8, 30 or 60 milligrams daily, an oral suspension of cold nanocrystals. The treatment was well tolerated. After 24 weeks, there were no significant differences in ALS severity between the pooled CNM-AU8 and the placebo group. However, there were consistent trends in time to clinical events favoring CNM-AU8, 30 milligrams. A longer phase 3 trial is needed to confirm these findings and explore survival. Finally, regimen D is pirdopidine, 45 milligrams twice daily, a highly selective and potent sigma-1 receptor agonist. It was well tolerated, but after 24 weeks, there were no differences with placebo in primary or key secondary clinical endpoints. In exploratory and subgroup analysis, pirdopidine improved speech function. It was also associated with a reduction in neurofilament light levels in fast-progressing patients. A phase 3 trial is needed to confirm these results. Then there were results from the phase 3 ELEVATE trial, which assessed atogepant for patients with treatment-resistant episodic migraine. Atogepant is an oral calcitonin gene-related peptide receptor antagonist. The ELEVATE trial tested atogepant in treatment-refractory European and North American participants who had 4 to 14 monthly migraine days, MMDs. Overall, 56% of participants had failed two classes of oral preventive medication classes, and 44% had failed three or more. Participants were randomized 1-to-1 to daily treatment with atogepant 60 milligrams or a placebo. The primary endpoint was a change from baseline in the mean MMDs over 12 weeks. The efficacy analysis population consisted of 309 participants. After 12 weeks, the decrease in MMD in the atogepant group was significantly larger than in the placebo group, with -4.2 versus -1.85, and a p-value below 0.0001. Patients also significantly improved on all secondary endpoints with atogepant versus placebo, including a 50% or greater reduction in MMDs, change in mean monthly headache days, and change in acute migraine drug use over 12 weeks. The 50% responder rate was 50.6 and 18.0% respectively. There were no new safety signals. The most common treatment-emergent adverse events was constipation, which occurred in 10% of the atogepant group and in 2.5% of the patients in the placebo group. The three other most common treatment-emergent adverse events were COVID-19, nausea, and nasopharyngitis. A limitation of the study was a short 12-week time frame. However, longer duration poses a general ethical problem for migraine trials. The long-term efficacy and safety of prophylactic atogepant are yet to be determined. Then there was a study presented by Dr. Erica Peterson of the University of Arkansas investigating whether spinal cord stimulation eases painful diabetic neuropathy. Around a quarter of all patients with diabetes experiences painful diabetic neuropathy, or PDN. The impact on sleep and overall quality of life is substantial. Current first-line pharmacotherapy and other types of conventional medical management are ineffective in many cases. Dr. Peterson explained that spinal cord stimulation, or SCS, reduces pain by electrically stimulating neurons through leads placed in the epidural space. She noted that as a result of her group's previous work, SCS is approved by the FDA for the treatment of PDN and has been recommended by the American Association of Clinical Endocrinology and the American Diabetes Association. Here she presented the design and the results of the SENZA PDN study. A total of 216 patients were recruited from 18 centers across the USA. Participants had PDN for more than a year, failed on at least two pharmacotherapies, and had lower limb pain with an intensity of more than 5 cm on a visual analog scale of 0 to 10 cm. The 216 participants were randomized 1-to-1 to 10 kHz SCS plus conventional medical management or to conventional medical management alone. After 6 months, participants were allowed to cross over if desired. Dr. Peterson reported outcomes through 24-month follow-up. The number of participants who were originally assigned or crossed over to 10 kHz SCS totaled 181. The trial to implant ratio was 85%, meaning 154 patients received an implant. Of these, 142 continued for 24 months. There were no stimulation-related neurological deficits, no explants for loss of efficacy, an infection rate of 5.2%, and a 3.2% explant rate due to infection. At 6 months, patients receiving 10 kHz SCS had an average pain decrease of 76% and an improvement in motor function and reflexes of 62%. Patients in the control group experienced an average pain increase of 2% and a functional improvement of 3%. Pain relief was found to be durable. At 24 months, patients treated with 10 kHz SCS experienced average pain relief of 80%. Neurological improvements were also durable, with 66% of patients receiving SCS reporting them at 24 months. Importantly, there was a 62% reduction in sleep disturbance at 6 months in the SCS group, compared to a 4% increase in the control group. At 24 months, this reduction was 66%, with a consistent treatment effect for crossover subjects. Then there were results from the Trailblazer ALTS-4 trial, which assessed donanemab in patients with early Alzheimer's disease. Trailblazer ALTS-4 is the first study to directly compare disease-modifying therapies in patients with early Alzheimer's disease, or AD, said Professor Stephen Salloway of the Warren Albert Medical School of Brown University, Rhode Island, USA. He explained that this was a randomized open-label parallel group phase 3 trial in 31 centers across the USA. Participants were 50 to 85 years old with early symptomatic AD. They were stratified on APOE4 status and amyloid burden at baseline. Participants randomized to donanemab could discontinue treatment on meeting predefined brain amyloid clearance criteria. After 7 weeks of screening, 148 participants were included. 74 were assigned to each group. For aducanumab, US-approved label dosing was used. For donanemab, the following clinical trial protocol was used: 3 doses of intravenous 700 mg donanemab every 4 weeks, followed by 1400 mg every 4 weeks. The co-primary endpoint was amyloid clearance at 6 months in the full analysis set and in the intermediate tau subpopulation. Upon assessing florbetapir 18 PET scans at 6 months, the researchers found that 37.9% of participants in the donanemab group met the co-primary endpoint in the full analysis set versus 1.6% in the aducanumab group, with a p-value below 0.001. In the intermediate tau subpopulation, these percentages were 38.5 and 3.8 respectively, with a p-value of 0.008. Donanemab was also superior in reducing plasma p-tau 217. The safety profiles of both treatments were consistent with previous study data. Professor Salloway said that despite the greater clearance of amyloid in the donanemab group, there was no difference in the incidence of amyloid-related imaging abnormalities, either characterized by edema and effusion or by cerebral microhemorrhages. The Trailblazer ALTS-4 study is ongoing. Analysis at 12 and 18 months are underway. Finally, there were interesting results coming from the Phase 3 CHAMPION NMOSD trial, presented by Dr. Sean Pidcock of the Mayo Clinic. Ravulizumab binds the same complement component 5 epitope as eculizumab. However, because of its longer half-life, it can be dosed more conveniently every 8 weeks instead of every 2 weeks. Therefore, the safety and efficacy of ravulizumab were evaluated in the global open-label Phase 3 CHAMPION NMOSD trial. CHAMPION NMOSD included 58 adult participants with anti-aquaporin 4 antibody-positive neuromyelitis optica spectrum disorder, or AQP4-positive NMOSD, who had at least one attack or relapse in the 12 months before the screening visit. They were allowed to stay on stable supportive immunosuppressive therapy for the duration of the trial. All participants were given two meningococcal vaccines at least 2 weeks before starting ravulizumab treatment. The placebo arm of the PREVENT study served as an external comparator. The primary endpoints were time to first on-trial relapse and relapse risk reduction. The median follow-up was 73 weeks for all 58 ravulizumab-treated participants and 36 weeks for 47 participants receiving a placebo in the PREVENT study. In the ravulizumab group, no participants had a relapse versus 20 participants in the control group, resulting in a relapse risk reduction of 98.6% and with a p-value below 0.0001. Also, significantly fewer participants in the ravulizumab group had clinically important worsening of HAI scores compared to placebo, with 3.4% versus 23.4%. In the ravulizumab group, 93.1% reported treatment-emergent adverse events. Serious adverse events were seen in 13.8%, including two cases of meningococcal infection, which recovered with no sequela. Despite a longer follow-up period in the experimental group, efficacy and safety remained consistent with the primary treatment period. After a median of 91 weeks, still no relapses were observed.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.